This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. You cannot legally drive a car without insurance. That is true in 49 of the 50 states. And the reason, of course, is that cars can be dangerous machines and drivers make mistakes. In fact, more than 42,000 people died in car crashes in 2021 alone, according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. However, there's another potentially deadly machine that caused even more deaths that same year. Guns. Some 48,000 people died due to firearms in 2021, 6,000 more than in car crashes. So if firearms are more dangerous in America than cars, why can't the government require gun owners to have insurance as they do with drivers? Well, this month, one city became the first in the nation to do that. As of January 1st, every gun owner in San Jose, California, is required to have gun liability insurance, or they could be fined a minimum of $250. So what exactly is San Jose requiring, and why? And can it really make neighborhoods safer? Well, we're going to start today with Sam Liccardo, because he signed the city ordinance into law early last year when he was the mayor of San Jose. He served two terms, and December 31st of last year was his last day in office, as the city has term limits in place. So, former Mayor Liccardo, welcome to On Point.
Great to be with you, Meghna.
So, first of all, can you tell me the story of what gun violence or firearm injuries and deaths in San Jose is and was like that made you start thinking about requiring gun owners' liability insurance?
Well, like any large city, we've certainly endured our tragedies and hardships. We've had several mass shootings in San Jose, like just about every other big city in the country. But really, the untold story is about the dozens of emergency room admissions and deaths that result from unintentional shootings. When a survey was conducted by a gun analyst over the last 6 years or so, we learned of the 206 individuals on an annual basis who were hospitalized as a result of gunshots, that 80 of those 206 actually were the result of unintentional shootings. So there's a lot of harm, a lot of injuries and death that's resulting from unintended use of guns, whether it's negligence or recklessness or anything else. And the question is, how can we reduce some of that death and injury and some of the human misery?
Right. So let me just add a couple of more details here, because you did mention mass shootings, and I don't want us to ever become casual about that, right, Mayor? So just as a reference point, it was as recently as, 2021 in May, where there was a terrible mass shooting at the Santa Clara Valley Transportation Authority, where a gunman killed 9 people and then himself. So, just want to put a little bit of humanity around those facts. Now, in addition, though, the city, to your point about all the other costs of gun violence, whether it's deliberate or accidental, to San Jose residents and the city itself, there was a report commissioned, right? And it was done by the Pacific Institute for Research and Evaluation. And they found that gunfire annually kills or injures more than 200 people in San Jose. And then they put a cost on that. They said annually San Jose spends at least $7.9 million responding to shootings.
Yeah, certainly the financial cost to taxpayers is something that this organization PIRE calculated. Obviously, it doesn't compare to the human cost that's borne by our families. But the reality is that there's enormous public cost to gun violence in the state of California. Based on one analysis, was about $1.4 billion a year. That is cost that's borne overwhelmingly by people who don't own guns, who are taxpayers, who are paying for everything from emergency medical response to police officers.
Now, you do have, though, 50,000, some 50,000 gun-owning households in San Jose, and I presume those are legal gun owners. And I'm not sure if the report went into how many illegal guns are in San Jose. So tell me, what was the thinking behind looking to the possibility of gun owners' liability insurance to help address some of the problems that you just outlined?
Yeah, there were actually two proposals that we brought to the council that were approved last year. It's important to recognize the insurance was just a piece of this. The other piece was requiring the gun owners to pay a fee that we could then use, that is actually a nonprofit would use, to invest in violence prevention, that is in mental health, in suicide prevention, and domestic violence prevention, and targeting those dollars in those homes where guns are owned, which is, happens to be really important because we know that deaths from suicide, domestic violence, and so forth are far, far more likely if there's a gun in the home. So this was a two-part ordinance. The insurance part is, for all the obvious reasons, we believe insurance is important. We want to compensate victims and victims' families for harm from guns. We also believe that those costs ought to be distributed in some ways that are not simply borne by those who don't own the guns. And finally, we're trying to induce safer behavior. And this is really the important point. Just as with auto insurance and all the improvements we've seen in auto safety, whether it's airbags or anti-lock brakes or simply good driver discounts, we know that the insurance industry can effectuate better behavior, incentivize better behavior, whether it's for a gun owner to take gun safety classes or more importantly, maybe to buy a gun safe and to keep a safe gun there, which is really, really important in a country where more than 4.5 million children live in a home where a gun is kept loaded and unlocked. You can also have trigger locks. You can have chamber load indicators. These are all devices and technology that really there's no market incentive for gun owners to utilize these technologies. We think there ought to be, and insurance companies can be the mechanism to ensure that we have safer gun ownership. The goal here is not to take anyone's gun away. It's not to invade anybody's home to search for guns. It's simply to ensure gun ownership is safer.
Mm. So by bringing, as you said, the insurance industry into the picture, you hope to, as you said, effectuate those changes. But now here's where we get to the nitty-gritty, though, because as far as I understand, the San Jose ordinance regarding the liability insurance perhaps won't bring about the kind of change you're looking for? Because if you already have regular homeowners insurance or renters insurance, you don't necessarily need to do anything differently once the San Jose gun liability insurance has taken, you know, once it took effect this month, because liability insurance is already included in most homeowner insurance plans.
In many policies, it is. In some, it's it requires getting a rider. And what we believe is that if this market were actually being fully utilized, insurance companies would be getting into the game of ensuring that we have risk-adjusted premiums that would encourage gun owners to engage in safer behavior. But right now, there is no mandate for insurance, and so there is simply no awareness among many policyholder owners that they even have insurance, or that they should get insurance. So it's very important to actually improve the information flows between policyholders and the insurance companies. Mm.
Well, we're already getting some response to this conversation. A listener on Twitter says, criminals will not buy insurance. This law will just raise the cost of legal gun ownership. The poor and minorities will be the hardest hit. How do you respond to that, Mayor Liccardo?
Well, first, we are anticipating that will be concerns about everyone's ability to exercise their Second Amendment rights without any kind of financial burden that will be too great a burden. And so we have exemptions for extremely low-income residents, and that's baked into the ordinance. So I'm confident this will be something we can implement in an equitable way. Secondly, of course, criminals are not going to get insurance. Criminals don't get auto insurance either. But it provides a mechanism for enforcement and for follow-up. For example, when a police officer comes to a home after a domestic violence call and asks, as every police officer is supposed to ask, is there a gun in a home? That is the beginning of an opportunity to understand whether or not an individual is complying or not. And then obviously, if they're not complying, there could be enforcement. So the point is, we recognize crooks aren't going to follow laws. If that's the standard, then you don't pass any law at all over guns, because we know there's going to be a black market. And frankly, we're not doing a terribly good job today of preventing gun violence with laws. Nonetheless, if we think that law-abiding gun owners are going to follow laws, and they should, and they will, then we can reduce a lot of human misery, a lot of injuries and deaths with liability insurance in the same way we see it in the auto industry and other other dimensions of our lives.
Well, we're going to spend quite a bit of the hour talking about the details of what San Jose is implementing, some of which include that I believe the ordinance only requires liability insurance that would cover accidental use of firearms. That's a really small percentage of gun shootings. And then also, I think that there are exceptions as well. You talked about people experiencing financial hardship, but also exceptions for licensed concealed carriers and current and former members of law enforcement. I should note that the ordinance, though, has thus far withstood the court challenges put up against it. However, I mean, ultimately, I can't imagine that people who oppose this are going to give up. And do you think there's the ceiling of the Second Amendment in terms of what kind of requirements even a municipality can impose on gun owners? We've just got about 30 seconds here, Mayor.
Well, of course, we're going to comply with the Constitution no matter what. But the important thing, Manny, is a point you just made. I really want to correct the record. You said that this is a small fraction of harm. About 75,000 admissions to emergency rooms every year in this country from gun injuries and death. About 26,000 of those are from unintentional shootings. Okay, that's a third. It's a very significant share of what's happening in terms of gun harm in our country. If we're asking, is this going to suddenly stop gun violence or mass shootings? We're asking the wrong question. We need to focus on reducing gun harm and the larger ordinance, which is investing in prevention strategies with the gun fees, which we haven't discussed at all.
Yeah, well, Mayor Liccardo, we're going to keep discussing the details of what San Jose is implementing in a moment. Thank you for joining us. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about the concept of gun owners' liability insurance and how and why the city of San Jose, California, became the first in the nation as of this month to require such insurance. And just a few minutes ago, you heard from former San Jose Mayor Sam Liccardo taking us through why his city believes this new ordinance is a good idea. So let's dig in more into the details. And in order to do that, we're joined now by Jennifer Macia. She's a senior news writer and founding staffer at The Trace, a newsroom dedicated to covering gun violence. And she's written about the San Jose ordinance in an article titled, "Will Requiring Gun Owners to Buy Insurance Improve Firearm Safety?" And there's a link to that at onpointradio.org. Jennifer, it's great to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so first of all, I want to just clarify something, because Mayor Liccardo quoted some statistics about the number of accidental shootings that leads to emergency room visits, and he said it's like roughly one-third of gun violence-related shootings that are accidental. I just wanted to be specific and say the 1% number that I had referenced is from what I understand the San Jose gun owners' liability insurance would require. That is coverage of accidents if third parties are in the home accidentally using the weapon and it discharges and something bad happens. So that is a very rare occurrence. First of all, check me on that, Jennifer. Is that accurate?
Well, when we looked into this, we found that San Jose had actually only had about three unintentional shooting deaths in the last 7 years. Those numbers are national numbers. And San Jose is a sliver. And the shootings that the unintentional shootings, the few that have happened in the last 7 years, I looked into it. They all resulted in criminal charges. And they would not be covered under this policy. This policy does not cover anything that results in criminal charges. And a lot of people don't realize when you, use a gun, even if it's in self-defense, a lot of times there will be a prosecution, even if you're deemed justified at the end of this. Law enforcement does tend to get involved. And if that happens, this policy would not cover them. So yes, these unintentional shootings, not only that, under this law, you can't cover, say, a child finding a gun and accidentally shooting themselves or somebody else. These are the unintentional shootings that are especially tragic and that bring a lot of attention to this issue. Those are the things that a lot of gun safety advocates want to prevent. But you need to be a third party in order to get that covered. So somebody visiting your home, those would qualify. And that is a sliver of these accidental shootings. So that's even fewer that this policy would cover.
Mm. Now, Mayor Liccardo would immediately point out the gun ownership fee that the city is also now imposing. I don't want to forget about that, and we will come back to it. But let me ask you, though, Jennifer, in your long coverage of guns in America, what do you think about the argument, though, that, okay, this is just a start? Right. Like you heard Mayor Liccardo say that really part of the point is to create a market for insurers to become part of the mechanisms to reduce gun violence. And so why let perfect be the enemy of the good?
Yes, I think that this policy is different, right? It's a different policy. People are really thinking outside the box when it comes to these things because the traditional paths to legislation aren't really viable, especially federally. So, you have this policy where it's trying to encourage, I think, a cultural shift. And what you need for that, for it to be really, really effective on the insurance level, is widespread adoption. And I think that's what they're hoping. New Jersey recently passed a law also about insurance. We'll get to that later. But, I think that, it takes one, right? And they're hoping that this will catch on. The problem is it's only going to catch on in states that are run by, Democrats, progressives. We're seeing, there's states where gun laws are getting really stronger and states where they're getting weaker. And the gun laws states that are strong right now, they're more apt to try these policies. The way it would be really effective, when I spoke to insurance experts, is that widespread adoption with insurers actually saying, it's worth, delving into this market. Otherwise, they just don't see the point because, especially since when I looked, I called insurance companies, they said that they're not going to be recalculating rates, just like when you get a car, you call the insurance company, they give you a rate. The insurance companies are not, from what I understood reporting last year, going to be involved in that way. As a matter of fact, there's no requirement under this ordinance that you even call the insurance company and give them the serial number of your gun. For instance, like you'd call an insurance company and give them the VIN number of your car. That's not a requirement. So a lot of the things that would make a successful insurance market here are missing.
Okay. So Jennifer, with that thought in mind, I want to bring in RJ Lehman into the conversation. RJ's editor-in-chief and senior fellow of the International Center for Law and Economics, and he's been covering the insurance industry for decades. Author recently of the article, "The Nation's First Gun Insurance Mandates Take Effect, Will They Hold Up in Court?" RJ, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. So first of all, can you tell us specifically, pick up where Jennifer left off. Like, what are the requirements in the San Jose ordinance that you find most interesting, but perhaps unrealistic vis-a-vis what the insurance industry may or may not do?
Relative to some of the other proposals that are out there, including the New Jersey law, the San Jose law is not. It's not necessarily unrealistic. Most people do have liability insurance either through a homeowner's or a renter's policy. There are some renters, obviously, who don't get renter's insurance. The standalone firearms liability insurance, It has existed. It does exist to a small extent. The most significant product that offered something like that was actually offered through the NRA. And it's somewhat ironic because in some of the same states that are currently looking to require insurance, New York, New Jersey, Washington State, they all actually litigated to basically sue that NRA product out of existence on the argument that it covered criminal acts, which is debatable, but I will leave that aside. The San Jose law does only require coverage for accidents. As your other guest mentioned, if you had a first-party accident, members of a household, that would not be covered. Just as if, you know, your dog bites you, you can't make a homeowner's insurance claim. If your dog bites a guest, they might have a liability claim against you.
So then tell me, though, do you say that this is a lot of – is essentially the end point that this is a lot of magical thinking by San Jose City officials?
I'd say the biggest magical thinking is the idea that it's a very reasonable assumption that insurers will take data into account to try to underwrite, charge more to people who are riskier and less to people who are less risky, maybe in extreme case deny coverage at all. That's not the way that market works right now. If you get homeowners insurance, the homeowners insurer doesn't generally even ask if you have a gun, much less look into your personal history of use. It is probably not worth it to most insurance companies, given how small liability is as a part of a homeowner's policy. And then among liability, those claims that can be tied to firearms against third parties is vanishingly small. So they don't really invest the resources into underwriting that specifically. They charge basically a flat fee.
Okay. So this comes back to right now the market that San Jose is trying to create perhaps is just too small. But Jennifer, I just wanted to hear your thoughts on what RJ has been saying.
Yeah. I mean, it is – that is exactly what I found when I spoke to experts. It's just – it's not big enough. It needs to have widespread adoption in order to be effective. And this policy was sold by city officials, I noticed when I started reporting on it last year, as something that is seen as like a way to recoup some of these costs from gun violence. The problem is that these, you know, again, it's only going to cover a sliver of a sliver. What they really have started focusing on now that people started looking closely at the policy and seeing maybe it doesn't all that do all it's promised, this harm reduction fee, you know, is a way to try to, you know, fund anti-violence efforts. The thing is, the implication here is if you're charging gun owners this fee, the implication is that, you know, you're focusing on gun owners because gun owning itself is a dangerous endeavor. Well, that goes against a lot of NRA messaging and the beliefs of gun rights advocates. You know, guns are being sold right now as a net positive. You know, you need a gun to defend yourself. And a lot of Americans believe that. And putting the onus on gun owners for this, you know, I understand why they might feel some type of way. You know, guns, again, the guns that the 36 or so permit holders in San Jose have, because it's a very small number, probably aren't fueling a lot of gun crime.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've been talking about this under the umbrella of homeowners insurance because of the liability coverage that gives homeowners and renters if they have renters insurance. But I want to reframe here, because every single time we've been discussing what's happening in San Jose in our editorial meetings, my mind keeps coming back to cars and automobile insurance, right? Because like you could make the same argument about cars that you do about guns, that really they're not actually that dangerous in the hands of responsible people. And so why should folks be forced to have auto insurance, which they do in 49 of the 50 states? And in fact, Jennifer, I'm going to take a really good question that you asked right in your article. You say gun rights advocates claim the Second Amendment ensures their right to bear arms, but the Second Amendment does not require the public to subsidize gun ownership by paying for ambulances, police, emergency room technicians, etc. Should gun owners be required to purchase mandatory gun liability insurance in the event their gun kills or maims an innocent person? I would say the answer, if we change the word guns to cars, it's a resounding yes for decades in this country, right, Jennifer?
Yeah, but gun owners and gun rights advocates and the gun lobby will argue that cars are not in the Constitution. And that is really where this gets muddy. You know, there are gun owners and gun rights advocates who say that permit fees are, you know, an infringement, that, you know, there should be a clear path to owning weapons and the path should be as clear as possible because it's in the Constitution. I would like to hear what RJ says about this because the differences mm-hmm. between cars and guns are vast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's that's the first and most important difference, obviously, is that most car-related injuries are accidental. Right. And most gun-related injuries are not. They are purposeful. And in fact, if you look at the data on gun-related deaths, more than half are suicides. So that's a significant difference. Obviously, burdening car ownership and car use, it doesn't invoke the Constitution, whereas firearms do. The Supreme Court's most recent precedent in this area, and in the Bruin case, also lays out the premise that if a restriction on the Second Amendment did not exist historically, and we're historically we mean basically up to the Civil War, because that's when the 14th Amendment incorporates the Bill of Rights, then it's presumptively unconstitutional. And even this San Jose bill, it's being challenged on that. It's passed some tests, but it's still got a long ways to go. I think it is unlikely in the long term to hold up this mandate is.
Can I just jump in here? I don't want to drag us into a constitutional argument here.
Yeah.
But specifically, I mean, it's the Supreme Court that has interpreted the Second Amendment as mm-hmm. allowing for virtually unfettered gun ownership. But the actual language of the Second Amendment has the word mm-hmm. regulated in it, right?
Sure.
A well-regulated militia. So, who knows? Perhaps a future court could interpret it differently.
Very possible.
Okay, I wanted to throw that in there, but so mm-hmm. so here's the thing though. For Jennifer and RJ, I hear you about the Second Amendment and the arguments that groups such as the NRA would and are making against the concept of sort of municipally or state imposed liability insurance for gun owners. But on the other hand, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but if we put the Second Amendment aside for a moment, are there any aspects of gun ownership? And RJ, I'm going to turn this to you, that mm-hmm. the insurance company could offer policies for.
Sure, they do. They certainly they cover accidents, and that is not limited to firearms. There's any number of accidents that you could have. Not only in the home. For instance, your homeowner's insurance policy can cover you for accidents that you may cause outside the home. And the most obvious example would be hunting accidents like our former vice president had 17 years ago. That could be a homeowner's insurance claim if you accidentally hit one of your hunting partners. Or a third party, that's potentially something that could be covered. Insurers are interested in providing risk transfer to people. So the risk that you could be held liable for any number of things is something that they're interested in, and guns are no exception. You don't usually write liability policies for just one kind of liability, unless there's a really good reason, like you're a doctor, you get medical malpractice. The typical person doesn't get medical malpractice.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wonder what both of you think about something that Mayor Liccardo said a little bit earlier, that it's not just about requiring the liability insurance, but about the role that the insurance industry could play mm-hmm. in increasing gun mm-hmm. safety, right? Because, and again, he made the automobile analogy there. So he's talking about, well, if insurance are part of the system here, companies are part of the system, maybe they might offer reduced premiums if you have a gun mm-hmm. safe or a trigger lock or require you to mm-hmm. take gun safety classes. I mean, RJ, what do you think about that?
They don't right now. Could they? It's possible. Certainly. Like, data is not as easily available on some of these matters as people tend to assume. And gathering and processing data is costly. So whether it's worthwhile to the insurer to charge different rates to different kinds of risks depends on what they can possibly know about those risks. And that's not something you can just assume.
But okay, but don't we know a lot about the risks of gun ownership, though?
Not really. Not to know. Basically, what you're talking about is, can I tell beforehand whether this policyholder who owns a gun is more or less likely to have an accident that's going to harm a third party than some other policyholder? It's not – there's not very much that tells you that in any kind of clear way.
Okay. So when we come back, you're going to have to help me understand this, because I thought that's exactly the kind of decision – actuarial decision making that insurance companies make for other kinds of policies. So, RJ, you're going to help me out when we come back, and Jennifer Mashia will come right back to you as well. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we are trying to understand a first-of-its-kind ordinance that has been enacted this month in the city of San Jose, California. And it's an ordinance that now requires San Jose gun owners to carry some form of gun owner's liability insurance and requires them to pay an annual fee as well, the money which the former mayor tells us would hopefully go to funding gun violence reduction programs in the city. And we're asking, what role could gun owners' liability insurance play in reducing gun violence across the country? I'm joined today by Jennifer Mashia. She's a senior news writer and founding staffer at The Trace, a newsroom that is dedicated to covering gun violence. And RJ Lehman joins us as well. He's editor-in-chief and senior fellow at the International Center for Law and Economics. So, RJ, let's pick up where we left off. Mm-hmm. I was under the presumption, and again, I'm here to be corrected if it is wrong, that say for driving, depending on your age, your gender, your honestly, your driving record, your zip code, the kind of car that you own, these are all factors that go into determining what your premium might be.
They are. They weren't always. And this is important to remember. In the very recent past, we're talking into the 1980s and 1990s, typically an insurance company would offer a standard auto insurance policy for a regular driver. They might also offer a preferred policy for somebody who went many years without making a claim. Then if you got a moving violation, a ticket, you might move into a higher risk. And if you got two or more, you likely couldn't get a standard auto insurance policy at all. You would get assigned risk. And it was really in the 80s, the introduction of really advanced computer models and looking at where someone lives. Yes, age and gender were factors, and they are to some extent. What kind of work they do, what their credit history is, that insurance companies discovered all sorts of correlations that allowed them to create rates that were particular to a person. We don't know any of that yet about about firearms liability. It is possible that, you know, your credit score might be predictive of whether or not you're going to have a gun accident. But we don't know that, and we can't guarantee that it's true. Lots of things that we might think are correlated or might wish to be correlated, it turns out, are not. And that will you know, it takes quite a bit of investment to actually find those correlations.
Oh, okay. So there's a key thing. It would take investment. It would take money. But so, so Jennifer, though, I mean, when you talk to Mayor Liccardo for reporting your story, I mean, he offered the possibility that, you know, if insurance companies want to find that information, they are quite powerful and could do so. They could actually ask people, you know, do you have a gun safe in order to help determine what the premiums might be?
And all of my reporting indicated that they're just not. They're not at that point yet. You know, the unintentional shootings are so rare. The odds of paying out on a claim are so low that the insurance companies really don't see anything in it for them yet. You know, they've done the math and they're like, you know, it doesn't really make that much of a difference. If these risky gun behaviors actually affected their bottom line, insurers would already be asking about them. They'd already have the computer models like they do with car insurance.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But you also said that the mayor's office had told you that they had spoken to, what, a dozen or so insurance companies about the kinds of questions they already ask for other forms of insurance when people apply.
They did. And I was surprised because when I went to speak with insurance experts, they said, yeah, that's not really happening. I think a lot of this is hopeful. I think that they're hopeful that insurance companies will see buy-in, that they'll see something worth it in this. The problem is that you really need wider adoption for this. You need this affecting way more people. You know, almost many, many people have cars. And, you know, this is something that's a universal in all of our lives, pretty much. Fewer people have, you know, firearms permits, at least in California. It's a very selective, you know, it's very difficult to get a firearm purchasing permit in California. You already have to jump through a lot of hoops and get training. So this is a very low risk bunch. And that doesn't really make it a good prospect for an insurer.
Okay. But RJ, theoretically, I mean, I take all of your points about sort of the relative weaknesses in San Jose's, you know, first of its kind ordinance. But theoretically, one thing governments can do is create markets, right? And they frequently do for things that they think a new market is necessary. If a larger market were created statewide, so in a place like California, would insurance companies, you know, flow into that market?
It does depend on how it's created. A mandate like San Jose's likely won't have much effect because, as I said, that coverage already exists.
Okay.
And there isn't really any reason to change the policies. If they already qualify and they're profitable to the insurer, then why would they do anything differently? If you required something else, if you required, as New Jersey does, that they have to cover intentional acts, then you might actually have the problem of insurers pulling out of the market and no longer offering homeowners insurance because they don't want to cover that.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so let's focus then on New Jersey a little bit because San Jose was the first municipal ordinance. Yeah. But what's happening, Jennifer? Tell us more clearly what's happening in New Jersey.
So the New Jersey governor just signed a lot of laws in response to the Supreme Court decision saying you can't take your gun in certain sensitive places. Part of that law mandated gun owners to insure not just against accidental shootings, but intentional acts too. And it mandates $300,000 worth of coverage, which San Jose's ordinance does not do. This is kind of contradicts a tenet of the insurance industry, which is that, you know, we don't insure against intentional or criminal acts. It's really interesting because this was the exact rationale New Jersey used when they challenged the NRA's insurance carry guard, which RJ mentioned. It was on this exact basis. So you have 4 years later, the governor proposing the exact same plan and signing it into law. I have a lot of questions about how this is actually going to work.
Okay, so what? Give me the top three questions you would ask.
Well, is this going to be? Are insurers going to go along with this? I mean, the whole tenet of the industry is you don't insure against intentional or criminal acts. Another one is, you know, is it going to survive the court challenges? Those are my two main questions. How is this going to work? The insurance industry, it doesn't seem like they're going to go for this. But also, how is it legal if CarryGuard wasn't?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, RJ, before I get to you, let me just play a voice here from New Jersey really quickly. So this bill was passed last month, Jennifer, as you said, and it includes those provisions, more specifically restricting guns in places such as schools, casinos, bars, and restaurants, those sensitive places, Jennifer, that you mentioned. And it mandates that gun liability insurance for those who choose to get concealed carry permits. It's already, of course, facing legal challenges, but the insurance mandate for now remains and will go into effect in July if it's not, you know, legally dismantled by then. Resistance is coming from outside and within New Jersey as well. Here's Republican New Jersey State Senator Mike Testa on the New Jersey State Senate floor in December.
We have to ask ourselves, is there another constitutional right that is enumerated in the United States Constitution where we have to pay a fee to exercise it? Is there another constitutional right where we have to purchase insurance to exercise it? I'll answer that question. The answer is no. My questions were rhetorical. I know people will say, and I spoke about this in Senate Budget and Appropriations, people will talk about driver's licenses. Driving privileges in the state of New Jersey have always been deemed privileges and not a right. So they are not analogous in the least.
So State Senator Testa there once again holding up the Constitution as the ultimate limiting factor here. But RJ, the questions that Jennifer asked, I wonder how you might answer them from an analyst point of view. Like, will insurance companies even want to partake in the New Jersey market?
No, not writing insurance for intentional acts. I mean, to be honest, that in the homeowners insurance market, there's long been a debate over whether even negligent acts can be covered because the language in standard policies, the exclusion is very broad. And even if, say, I did intend to shoot you, but I didn't intend to maim you, or I didn't intend to kill you, that sort of claim would likely be denied by a homeowner's insurer under the language of their existing policies. So no, they would have no interest in writing anything that would cover intentional acts. What the CarryGuard program covered was defense costs and civil liability costs in cases where a policyholder claimed to have used their weapon in self-defense. That's why I even at the time would question whether it really covered a criminal act, but it's at least a potentially criminal act. And as mentioned, that was sued out of existence in a number of states as impermissible.
Mm. Well, and here's one of the reasons why. And again, just to give people a little bit more detail about CarryGuard, because it's been mentioned several times. Mm-hmm. This was an NRA-issued form of insurance, and I think they issued it back in 2017, and it was intended to offer insurance to cover legal fees, bail bonds, and access to counsel for people who were concerned about the legal costs of shooting someone in, in self-defense. And lots of folks, as both of you have mentioned, really objected to this policy. And one of them was the mother of Trayvon Martin, the 17-year-old who was killed in Florida by a shooter who alleged he was doing it in self-defense. Trayvon Martin's mother appeared in an ad opposing the NRA's CarryGuard program.
Now they're selling insurance that covers the cost. When a gun owner kills someone and claims self-defense, tell the two insurance companies that created NRA CarryGuard that if they keep offering murder insurance, they'll never get your business. My name is Sabrina Fulton, and my son's name was Trayvon Martin. It's time to put the guns down.
And the NRA, because of the resistance from states like New York, New Jersey, Washington, and California, they ended that CarryGuard program in 2019. So here's what I'm trying to understand from both of you. I have always considered the insurance industry as quite a powerful industry in the United mm-hmm. States that has affected, and we're all acknowledging this, it has affected behavioral change and made certain aspects of American life safer. Jennifer, do you see from your reporting, is there any possible role that insurers could play when it comes to, you know, gun violence, gun injuries and deaths in America?
Well, the insurance industry being what it is right now, not exactly. I mean, for the reasons that you mentioned, you know, unintentional shootings are, while tragic, and a lot of the time, you know, they do involve children, they're just not ripe for insurance in this area. And the thing that they're really trying to encourage is a cultural shift toward gun responsibility. Even the awareness that's been generated by these stories, you know, even reporters digging in, finding out that it's not all that's advertised. Believe it or not, you know, those stories have raised awareness of this entire issue. I think that that is really what city officials hoped for. You need awareness to shift something.
Mm. Well, so just briefly, though, to come back to the other part of the San Jose ordinance, that fee that would go to funding citywide programs intended to reduce, gun accidents and deaths. Could that be something? I don't. Are there other cities or states that have something similar already in place?
Not that I'm aware of. There have been, you know, efforts over the last 20 years to pass laws like this, and they failed in Massachusetts, New York. I mean, these are very progressive states. This does have kind of a, it is novel. But once again, it does put the onus on gun owners who, you know, may have a point when they say, look, you know, we have to jump through a lot of hoops to get a gun permit in San Jose and in California. We are not the problem here, but you're hitting us in the pocketbook yet again. The problem is the people actually causing the gun violence, you can't exactly extract the costs from them. And the gun industry, you can't really extract the costs from because there is a federal immunity that makes it very difficult to sue the gun industry. So we're left with this.
Ah, okay. So that then brings to mind, as you've reported, there's a bill that's been put on the table in Congress multiple times that would require gun owners to buy this kind of insurance when they purchase a firearm. It's been sponsored by Representative Carolyn Maloney of New York, who's filed the bill every year for, 10 years, Jennifer?
Yep. Ever since Sandy Hook.
Okay. Well, RJ, then same question for you. We've just got about a minute or so left. Is there any role you think that the idea of insurance could play in gun safety in America?
I think insurance is, it's a useful product, and the industry itself is concerned with safety generally. They're not interested at this point in writing this product. That could change. I don't have a magic ball, but at this point, given the data that they have and what they see in the market, this is not something that they're interested in writing either as a standalone product, and the intentional covering intentional acts is something that will almost certainly never happen.
Right, because I guess those will, as you both have said, they fall under criminal law, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, RJ Lehman, editor-in-chief and senior fellow of the International Center for Law and Economics, who's been covering the insurance industry for decades, also author of Nation's First Gun Insurance Mandates to Take Effect, Will They Hold Up in Court? Thank you so much for joining us, RJ.
Thank you for having me.
And Jennifer Macia, senior news writer and founding staffer at The Trace, a newsroom dedicated to covering gun violence. And they do so brilliantly, I should say. And also author of Will Requiring Gun Owners to Buy Insurance Improve Firearm Safety? Jennifer, it's great to have you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And by the way, you can find links to both RJ and Jennifer's writing at our website, onpointradio.org. A little heads up, coming up on Monday, we're going to continue this conversation about guns in America because we're going to have a one-on-one interview with Shannon Watts. She's the founder of now the national anti-gun violence group, Moms Demand Action. She founded the group after the horrible Sandy Hook massacre back in 2012, and it's since become one of the largest anti-gun violence groups in the country. So we're going to hear Shannon Watts' story on Monday. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.